Welcome back to the Morning Mix. This is Mickey Huff, director of Project Censored. The second part of our program this morning, we are delighted to have the interim general manager, Andrew Phillips, with us. I wanted to make a very quick disclaimer. Our co-host on Thursdays is Dr. Peter Phillips. Andrew is no relation. Just wanted to put that out there. So rather than have me go into this or introduce Andrew Phillips anymore, Andrew's joining us in studio. So let's turn it over and have Andrew address the audience.
Thanks so much, Mickey, and it's just a real privilege to be here this morning. This is the first time since I've been the interim general manager that I've had an opportunity to get on the mic, and I do appreciate this opportunity to be at a very important station at a very important time. I'm not new to KPFA. In fact, I was a guest here many years ago on Jane Heaven's program, and I've produced a couple of programs here from way back. And I used to work at WBAI, the Pacifica outlet in New York City, for some time. A little bit more on that in a moment. I do want to say, as an interim manager, thank you so much for all of those that pledged during the recent, quite difficult fund drive under fairly difficult circumstances. It's no secret that we're in a little bit of turmoil here at KPFA. I guess that's radio. But we're going to get through this. I'm going to talk just a little about that in a moment, rather tendentious perhaps, but let's leave that for now. Let me just start by saying, 32 years ago the accident happened at Three Mile Island. And in a strange, synchronous moment, that was my first introduction to Pacifica when I was making a film down in Harrisburg 10 days after the meltdown at TMI, Three Mile Island, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, on the 28th of March, 1979. And I'd recently heard Pacifica, specifically WBAI, and was just amazed at what I was listening to. At the time, I was a freelance sound recordist and television producer working with the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, and subsequently worked in radio doing documentaries for the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. But I'd never heard anything quite like Pacifica. And when I did, I was just glued to the radio. And when the accident happened at Three Mile Island, the coverage, the way that station kicked in was just fantastic. They covered it in ways that no one else was covering it. They had people on like John Goffman, who I think has died, and I think he actually comes from out this way, Dr. John Goffman. They had Herbert Mancuso, I believe. Helen Caldicott way back then. I'd met Helen Caldicott in 1978 at the Rose Bowl in Los Angeles when she was speaking. We were doing a television program on Eugene McCarthy. And so I'd met Helen already. I've been friends with her. It was great to hear her on air the other day here too. So it's just synchronous that I would be introduced to WBAI 32 years ago as the Three Mile Island accident unfolded, and to be here today. And I do send out my heartfelt condolences and support in every way that I can, both as Andrew Phillips and as a radio station, to those friends and families who are both in Japan and in the Bay Area. And we'll do as much as we can here at KPFA to bring you the news and to support you in any way we can. And please do not hesitate to contact me directly, Andrew Phillips, at the station, letting us know what we can do to facilitate, help, and spread the information that needs to be spread. I love radio. Although I've been out of it for about 15 years now, I love radio, and I love the potential for KPFA and Pacifica, and for community radio in general. It's so important, as you all know, it's why you're listening right now. But at this time, when this radio station in particular, and radio and other old media in general, are impinged upon by the internet, we really do need to lift our heads up above our navels, don't we? And move to higher ground in every sense. Look at the big picture. I think we need to ask ourselves, do we want to be part of it? Are we going to get down and do the work, or aren't we? Union struggles, management struggles, set aside. How are we going to move forward? Are we going to adapt and change as a radio station and fulfill our historic obligation and function? Can we agree as a community on the basic role of this radio station? You know, recently the Pew Project for Excellence in Journalism issued its annual State of the Media report. That was just last Monday. And you'll be unsurprised to learn that journalism remains in broad retreat, overwhelmed by Newslight, by Charlie Sheen, half-truths, happy talk, you know, Fox's quotation, fair and balanced, BS. Though today it's different. They've kicked in, sure, because of the catastrophe in Japan. But where do we get the good information that can inform and instruct? We know people are hungry for real news, for real information. And I point out, what happens when the emergency strikes San Francisco? Are we ready as a radio station, as a community? And I put that out as a challenge to our producer community and to our audience. Let's get on top of that one too. And let's do it quickly. I want to hear from you on that also. Emergency preparedness. Let's go. Let's get this together and let's share the information. It's not just coming so much from radio, this desire for news, but news is still on the march. And do you know, for the first time ever, more people consumed their news on the web than in newspapers. So there's a shift happening. Now that's great if you're building an app or something, but not so great if you're one of the legacy media such as we are, struggling for relevance. I mean, our audience has dropped off. And now, in terms of audience, television networks have also slipped by about 3.5%. Newspapers are down 5. Radio fell 6. Magazines down 9. But it doesn't have to be like this, particularly at a radio station like this. And, you know, amid all that creative destruction, there was one large traditional news organization that actually added audience, reporters and revenue. And that unlikely juggernaut was NPR. NPR is doing fine. It certainly was not Pacifica. At the same time, Democracy Now!, which was indirectly spawned by Pacifica, is going gangbusters. So it's not all bad news in the community radio front. It's now Democracy Now! On more than 900 stations. So there is an audience still hungry for the alternative. But I'm sorry to say, we here at KPFA, we just seem too busy squabbling amongst ourselves about rather, I would suggest, insignificant issues most of the time to really notice what we really could be and should be doing. I'm just throwing that out there as a challenge to us all. It's no secret that KPFA has been in some trouble. And you know, your station does have a reputation for devouring managers. Right now, I tell you, I'm feeling a little bit like Russell Crowe in the Gladiator's Pit. But it's okay. KPFA seems to be suffering some kind of autoimmune disease, I'd suggest. It's kind of devouring itself piece by piece. Now, I'm not here to play Vince McMahon to a bunch of World Wrestling Federation entertainers. I'll tell you that much. My name's Andrew Leslie Phillips. I was offered the job of interim general manager by Pacifica's executive director, Arlene Engelhardt. And somewhat to my surprise, since I've been out of the radio biz for about 15 years, I agreed to give it a shot. Now, you should know that there will be a search for a permanent manager in due course. But for now, I'm your guy. Could be 6 months, could be less, could be more. But I'm here to help. And whilst I left radio some years ago, and in the past few years I've been engaged with permaculture, perhaps we'll talk more about that another time, something I teach, radio's never been far from my radar. Now, I think you should know that at heart I am a teacher and a radio producer. I've done a lot of teaching at the university level. I taught at the Tisch School of the Arts, the film school in New York City, teaching radio production, and in their journalism school, and at a number of other tertiary institutions around New York City. I've taught and mentored a lot of radio people, a lot of producers over the years. I've produced a lot of radio documentaries. So I'm a radio person. I'm a radio documentary producer, and I've been a program director, and I've been a part-time or a fill-in manager also over at WBAI. I come here with a vision, really, to open the door more widely here at KPFA. We also have a lot of respect for the producers here that have spent so many years working at this radio station. I throw this out also. I used to say to producers at WBAI, some of the long-timers, maybe they'd been there 20 years, I said, well, why should you be here 21? You've been here 20. What are you going to do in your 21st year? How are we going to capitalize on all that experience and make it even better? We can't rest on our laurels, because there are so many young people who would love to be in radio, who would love to be here working. And with that, I point to the apprenticeship program. I'm looking to get to know those young apprentices and the not-so-young ones too, and to welcome them more into the station, to welcome the volunteer community into this radio station, especially the young producers, those in our apprenticeship program. And in fact, I want to open the airways for an entire day, for 12 hours, to our apprenticeship program quite soon and give them the air for a day. I want to hear what they got. I want to hear some life. I want to hear what they got. I want to hear what the young people have to say. You know, we need to be able to adapt and change and spin on a dime and bring you the very best we can. Now, today we're in an emergency situation because of what's happening in Japan. It's hard to get information at this point. We're going to do our best. Our producers here are going to do our best to bring you as much information as we can relative to that. We'll probably be breaking into programming across the day to do that. What is the impact on the West Coast? What should we be doing? How can we prepare for the plume that's coming this way? So the best information that we can provide, we will. Let's acknowledge that right now, the situation at KPFA, however, is not really a normal one. We've gone through a bunch of managers quite quickly. We hear a lot about the union. We hear a lot from the management, paid producers. But, you know, whilst the union obviously is very important, it really represents about a quarter of the station. Volunteers represent 80% roughly of the station. And the real strength of community radio has always been in the volunteer community, not just the paid producers. Now, I don't want to belittle the paid producers. They've worked hard to get to their positions and they deserve to be there. But you know what it's like. I know what I'm like. You get in these positions, you take a deep breath and lay back. You know, you're not on the edge anymore. It's human nature. This isn't a threat. It's a promise. I'm going to help you make it better, and you're going to help me make myself better, and we're all going to make this radio station better. We're going to work together. One gets the impression here at KPFA that it's all about the union and the bosses. Well, it's not really. Guess who it's about? It's about you, the audience. That's what it's about. Now, I'm an Aussie. I volunteered at WBAI back in the late 70s. I was there for, as a volunteer, about 15 years or so. And I'd say Pacifica was much more raunchy in those days. There were no paid producer staff. The staff that were paid were those facilitating the volunteers. It was all volunteer, except for a small nucleus of department heads, a program director and a manager, and some financial staff, but it was nothing like it is today at Pacifica Station. So we've got a much larger load in terms of finances to meet much larger budgets. But back then, it was a real privilege to work at WBAI and to work for nothing, to give your utmost and love it. It was great to be on the air broadcasting from the Empire State Building going out 60 miles. And it's great to be here in Berkeley. I think it goes out even further, the signal. The resources and the facilities at this radio station are great. And a credit to David Selnick, a past executive director, I would suggest, who I think engineered along with Pat Scott, bringing of this radio station to life, the new station. I think it was formerly on Shattuck Avenue, I think it was. Anyway, for every producer, there are probably hundreds, if not thousands, of people who'd give just about anything to get on the radio here at KPFA. We all know that community radio can be a gateway to a flourishing career in broadcasting, or that we can create a flourishing career right here as well, and many have. But as I've said, and for fear of repeating myself too often, I'll say it once more, I think we've become a little bit self-absorbed here these days. Too much about us, not enough about our audience. Now, I'm going to be talking about some of these things. I'm going to be talking again on the radio tomorrow on Hard Knocks Radio around about 4 o'clock. And subsequently, we're going to be doing reports to the listener. We'll be doing those reports, I would think, monthly. That's my desire. And there will absolutely be room for you as an audience to call in, but not today because, frankly, I don't know enough to be able to rationally fend off and answer in an intelligent way your questions. So I thought it'd be a good idea for me to introduce myself to you just so you know who's at the helm here now. So talking about self-absorption, let me talk about me for a moment longer. I'm Australian, obviously. I came to America from Australia and Papua New Guinea, actually, where I lived for 7 years back in the... I came here in the mid-70s. I was in Papua New Guinea in the late 60s, early 70s, living in a grass hut. I listened to the men on the moon, if they got to the moon. Some think they didn't. I listened to the men on the moon on a shortwave radio in a grass hut. I thought that was kind of interesting. I arrived in San Francisco when I flew in from actually Tahiti, where I had a stopover, and I loved it. I loved the freewheeling kind of intelligence, the political dissidence. I loved the drugs, the sex, the rock and roll. I loved it all. Not so much now. But back in the day, it was great. And I found myself staying in America. Very quickly, I got interested in the politics. And then once again, Helen Caldicott was the voice I heard that woke me up and got me very interested in the nuclear movement, the anti-nuclear movement, Sam Lovejoy, the Clamshell Alliance, the affinity groups of the 60s, Murray Bookchin out of Goddard College. I studied with Murray. I just really loved it, and I started to make films about it. I went down to Tennessee. I spent a lot of time in Nashville covering the Tennessee Valley Authority, which at the time had the largest nuclear power construction program in the world. I was working down there with Albert Bates, who came from the farm in Tennessee, and some of you old codgers out there will know that Stephen Gaskin left Haight-Ashbury in the late 60s in about, 60, 70, 80 school buses looking for a place to live and finished up in Summertown out there and started one of the most successful communes in the country, which is still going. It's actually been decommunalized at this point. People have bought back into it. They own their own property. But one of my friends and colleagues, Albert Bates, who walked down there from New York City, a lawyer, is still there, and I met him 30 years ago. He was the lead counsel for a woman called Janine Honecker trying to shut down the entire nuclear fuel cycle because the fuel cycle, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission acknowledged themselves that the industry would kill probably 5,000 people through emissions from nuclear power plants. This was known as cost, in those days we talked about cost-benefit analysis. The benefits of nuclear power, in their terms, justify the cost and loss of those lives. I think many more people died and have gotten cancers than that number, 5,000. But a woman called Janine Honecker, an upright citizen from Nashville, Tennessee, said her daughter had leukemia. She knew what it was like to live with a child with cancer. And so she took on the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. And Albert Bates from the farm in Tennessee and Joel Kaczynski were the lead counsels. And that's, I read about that in the Village Voice. I said, that's a story. And I went down to visit Janine. She thought I was from the FBI. Who's this Australian coming in? She said, but we'll take him in. We'll convert him too, she said. So I worked with Janine for a long time. Sorry to say I never finished the film. And for you young filmmakers out there, don't spend your own money on your own films. And don't spend your credit cards either. Try to get some, OPM, other people's money. You know what I'm saying? I didn't finish the film, but I learned a lot. So this was all part of my learning experience. It was really out of that, being down in Tennessee when that accident happened at Three Mile Island, that I had some information. I had some great tapes, and I brought them into the station. I was on that radio station from, I don't know, 8 o'clock at night till 6 o'clock the following morning, playing tapes, phone calls, interviewing the experts, you know, people that weren't getting on the mainstream media. And that just really galvanized me and showed me just how extraordinary community radio was, and open in every sense. It was just a fantastic experience. I remember my very first interview I did with Australian Broadcasting was with a guy called James Jesus Angleton. Now, I know some of you will recognize that name because he was formerly head of the Central Intelligence Agency's counterintelligence program for 25 years. And he was telling us back there in the late 70s how the Central Intelligence Agency had undermined the left-wing government of Gough Whitlam in Australia back in the early 1970s. Right from the horse's mouth it came. It was amazing. We filmed it. 16mm film in those days. Wasn't on TV. And I had a Nagra tape recorder and a 815 shotgun microphone about 25 foot long. You know, one of those long ones. We put the interview on a plane because we didn't use satellites in those days. And, of course, the interview never arrived in Australia. It was cherry-picked. I guess the Australian Security Intelligence Organisation didn't want our Australian broadcasting audience to know what and how the Australian Prime Minister had essentially been destabilised in a similar way to Allende in Chile, and we never went to air. I learned after that to always do a dub of the tape, to keep a copy. That time I didn't, so we lost the interview. So I found myself travelling a lot. I was in Havana, I was at the Non-Aligned Nations Conference there in 1979, interviewing the great Wilfred Burchett, the Australian journalist who was the first Western journalist into Hiroshima after the atomic bombing of Hiroshima. And he wrote down with his Olympia typewriter on a piece of rubble, and he wrote the headline, "I write this as a warning to the world." And I was very lucky and honoured to be able to interview Wilfred. And so I guess I'm just sharing a few war stories to let you know that I'm an old stager. I've been in the business a while. I've just received a very warm welcome here from the KPFA community. I'm looking forward to attending the LSB meeting on the weekend and learning and listening, not talking too much. I've been talking too much today, but doing much more listening. And I'm interested to hear your comments and suggestions, because we are going to move forward. It's a great time for broadcasting. It's an exciting news time. I wish it wasn't so exciting. We are going to look into that emergency preparedness, and let me leave you with that. And we're going to wind up, and I'm going to be back here tomorrow about 4 o'clock, and be in touch. You're listening to KPFA Pacifica Radio in Berkeley, California. Look forward to meeting some of you soon.